Well, welcome back to the Drew Marshall Show. Thank you for we're coming up on the end of the show, and it's when you walk into the studio, I'll say because I don't do this as a professional gig, I'm more of a podcaster and social change guy. And don't forget face-to-facelive.ca. We've just published our 404th interview just this past Wednesday. Check it out for more information there. You walk in and you think, wow, how am I ever going to get this done? This is 4-hour window. We've got all these guests. There's pressure. It's technical. We had a band in here with 5 people. It was a crowded space. But you know what? We're here, and it's almost too bad. It feels, wow, we're coming to the end. We're about to walk off stage. We're running through it. We got Steve Norton here with us. He's our recurring guest. He was on last week. He's a pastor. He's a storyteller. He's a podcaster. He loves film. And he is a host and a blogger and a critic, a film critic on screenfish.net. Steve, thanks for joining me again today. And I'm hoping you're maybe going to see us in the studio next week. But thanks for joining us on the Drew Marshall Show today.
Oh, thanks for having me back, David. Appreciate it.
So last week I wanted to talk about the Toronto International Film Festival. You and I were both there. We didn't cross paths at all, but we've certainly compared a few notes. You've had a busy week this week. If I get a chance, I do want to talk about a film that I saw, but I want to hear about you. You got out to see, I think, what, 3 this week: First Man, Star Is Born, and Bohemian Rhapsody. Can you tell us a little bit about any of those 3 and why people should maybe go out to see them?
Well, yeah, you know, it's really interesting because they're all 3 very different films. And, of course, that would make sense, but 2 of them are musicals. So each film has a very different feel and a very different target, very different voice. And I actually thought they're all good, but for very different reasons. Star Is Born is pretty intense. It's a pretty powerful film. It's a pretty powerful film, and a lot of what you see in there, there's a lot of intensity in the relationships between the two of them, between the two leads, Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper, just incredible chemistry between the two of them, which caught me totally by surprise at how intense that relationship might be.
After all these years of you know, taking film and interviewing filmmakers and loving film, and I still haven't seen any of the 3. I think this is the 3rd version of A Star Is Born, is it not?
It actually might be the 4th. It's actually the 4th. Because there was one in 1935, and I think there was one in the 50s, and then of course the Streisand one was 1970.
Yeah, for some reason it's so interesting. I can't recall the year, but I remember the posters, the Kris Kristofferson one with Barbara Streisand. I remember that as being quite a moment in pop culture as a kid, but never got out to see the film. What about speaking of music? What about Bohemian Rhapsody? Is this a film? I mean, again, it's ignoring the critics and doing really well, because I think some of the critics didn't like the film, but love the performance, or performances, I suppose, but it's knocking it out of the charts, isn't it, at the box office?
Well, see, that's a funny thing. We just recorded our podcast airs every other Sunday, so we just recorded our Bohemian Rhapsody podcast yesterday, and when you hold the two of them up against each other, they're entirely different. Like, Bohemian Rhapsody is one that borders on toe-tapping, and it's almost fun, even though there are moments of, you know, drama and whatnot, but it's really a film that feels like it's made for the fans. And so it's funny, I came out of the film and I said I completely understand why the critics aren't going for it, but I enjoyed myself. And I mean, for crying out loud, the last 20 minutes of the film are basically Live Aid. And it's this live performance, which, you know, the critics are harping on a lot of the things that, because they change elements of the story. You know, you say, well, that's not what happened to Queen. But when you look at the performance at Live Aid or any of the performances, they're note perfect. I think Rami Malek, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, but Rami Malek is just incredible. And it's fascinating to me, because the reason it's so enjoyable is because the film does exactly what they say Queen wanted to do, which is playing for the people. So it's such a strange moment that you look at Star Is Born, and I can argue that it's a better film, But man, I had a lot more fun in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Is it one of those kinds of films where you might be talking to somebody at a party about it and they'll say, yeah, you know, I don't really know a lot of, I wasn't a huge Queen fan, but then they go and see the film and they go, I was pretty much singing along to every song. Is it one of those?
Oh yeah. I mean, it really truly is.
Did you stamp your feet during We Will Rock You?
No, I almost did, but there's a Wayne's World joke in the movie.
Funny.
And only two people in the theater, like, laughed. I was one of the two. I laughed out loud. It's a direct reference to Wayne's World.
Fun.
Because Mike Myers is in it. See if you can find him. It's pretty funny. That's what I mean. Like, it was one of those things where you could say, well, I totally get it as a critic. Yeah, there's some things that are just not well done, but there are so many things that are, that you come out of there just sort of feeling like you have been to a concert.
So, Steve, let's talk a little bit about Screenfish again and why you do it.
Sure.
And we kind of got into this a little bit last week, and I mean, you and I could chat about movies all day. I don't think that we'd have too much trouble. We wouldn't miss a beat or two. But I wanted to talk a little bit about this idea of a great versus an important movie. And we talked about this earlier in an interview, and I'm not sure who it was with, but this idea that you just go to the movies to be entertained. And we talked about this on Drew's show last Saturday just a tiny bit. But let's get to that in a second. But as a pastor, how are you, you know, using film? I mean, I think I've seen in the last 15 or 20 years a series of books coming out talking, you know, finding meaning in film, you know, this kind of thing. How do you use it? Do you use it? Or do you sort of let the stories speak for themselves?
Well, I think you use it by letting the stories speak for themselves. I think that's, you know, one of the things when I used to use film, I used to try and impose, you know, this sort of spiritual overtone over it in a way that wasn't serving the film. But one of the things I've learned is that every filmmaker, whether it's a Will Ferrell comedy or whether it's, whether it's the most intense of dramas, is trying to communicate something. There's some worldview that's coming out. And that's where I think scripture can engage culture. You know, when we talk about what Jesus did, Jesus was out in the culture. And he was speaking to people. Paul in Athens in Acts 17, you see him there, and he points to their poets and their authors, and he says, I see that you're very religious, and you're talking about the unknown God. Well, let me tell you who it is. But he even quotes their own poet. There's a poem about Zeus that he uses, in him we live and move and have our being. And he says, but you say this, but it's really, I want to talk to you about Jesus. And it's fascinating that he actually listens to the culture, listens to the cultural voice, and allows that to connect with scripture. It's not that everything you hear means scripture, because that would be ridiculous. But in every film, book, TV show, song, there's some worldview that I think we can engage. And as a pastor, I find that far more people are educated with their knowledge of media than they are of anything to do with the scriptures and gospel and truth, but they are willing to talk about their favorite film.
Do you think pastors, teachers, leaders will go global, have a responsibility to teach us, to show us how to actually live with media? I mean, to really treat it like the social tool that it really is. So it's about media literacy. I know, you know, we talk about it in schools but we just kind of, we treat movies and TV and so on just, well, you know, it's passive. It's happening in the background or I can walk away from it at any time and this kind of thing. And those are all true things, but I don't know that it gives it treats it with the respect and the impact, the potential for impact that I think that it deserves. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense. And I think if you look even, I mean, not just in the 20th century, but just because media exploded in the 20th century, what you saw was the church withdraw. And so what you saw was, I've had people that I know say to me, you know, what you're saying is foreign to me, because when I was a kid, if the pastor saw you in the lineup at the movie theater, you had to hide. And it was this idea that a good church-going Christian stays away from such things. But there's a heart of listening to the cries of the world that I think is that I think allows us an open space for conversation. And there's a great book. I'm gonna forget what his name is. Josh Larson wrote Movies Are Prayers, and his argument was that every film is a cry of the people. And so what is that cry? But we don't think of media that way. We think of it something as we should avoid, and I think there's some truth to that. We have to be careful of consumption and all that. I absolutely agree with that. But I don't think that we do the gospel any service by disengaging from what the world is trying to say is important to them.
Yeah, because there is a way to watch movies, it seems to me. Well, there's many ways, I suppose, to watch movies or to listen to stories. And you know, this whole idea of fertile ground and what is the conversation that's happening throughout? And then sometimes, more importantly, what's happening after? Are you one of these guys that bores everybody to tears after you walk out of a movie because you want to talk about it?
You got to know who you're with.
Yeah, it's true. Know your audience, right?
Know your audience. It depends on who I'm with. I have done that, but now I've learned to sort of use it as a place to start conversations, and some people don't want to talk about it. But that's the fun thing about the podcast is when we do our podcast, I love mixing it up. So we have people that just sort of rotate. I mean, you've been on a number of times. But it's great to mix up who you've got because you have different conversations, and you get people that are excited about certain things, even if they didn't like it. And you can use it as a way to springboard into deeper conversations.
I remember back in the 80s, I went to see a film and brought about five or six friends with me to a theater that's no longer there in Mississauga. Less Than Zero, an old Andrew McCarthy and Jamie Gertz and James Spader was in it, and a brilliant performance by Robert Downey as a drug addict, very young. Great film. And these six people, I don't think they talked to me for about 3 weeks afterwards. There was, yeah, we walked out dead silence. And yeah, it's so just as we wrap up, and an unfair question, and maybe we can take this into next week, and I want to talk about Tuva Novotny's new film Blind Spot. It's going to be hard to find, but it was at TIFF. It was one continuous shot, 90 minutes.
Wow.
Unbelievable piece of filmmaking, and it's about mental health, it's about relationships, it's about families, and about suicide. It's a profoundly meaningful and unsettling piece of work, and I had the good fortune of being able to interview her at TIFF. I want you to think about the difference between a great film and an important film, and I'm not sure what that means right now, but we're going to talk about that next week, Steve. You know, kind of that, I don't know, let's use two of Spielberg's movies, Raiders of the Lost Ark versus Saving Private Ryan. Is that a fair comparison?
For a great film and an important film?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I think that's relatively fair. I think it depends on what someone defines as necessary for being great.
Yeah, well, exactly right. And that's going to be our job, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true because important seems to have sort of a baseline standard, but I think we have to sort of explore that. That's a great topic. I look forward to getting into that easily.
Same, and we didn't get to talk about First Man. Are you going to see anything this weekend?
Not this weekend, although, because if I went and saw The Grinch without my kids, they'd shoot me. But, I mean, I know that Widows opens next weekend. I think Widows goes wide. I saw that at TIFF, and that is just one intense thrill ride. I will say that right now.
Wow.
Widows caught me completely by surprise. I heard it was good, but I didn't realize it was going to be that wild. It was good. It was a pretty solid film.
Great. Well, thanks for your time today, Steve. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. I've been talking with Steve Norton, host at screenfish.net, here today on The Drew Marshall Show.